Good morning, all y'all.
Good morning.
How are ya?
Good.
Anybody know the words to that song? Okay, Michael, the part that we care about.
Oh, I just love you just the way you are.
Okay, right? I love you just the way you are. I
love
you. You. Just the way you are. Right there. Just like that. So if we were to just close our eyes, just picture it. Just picture that perfect presence that is known by many names. I like to call it God. Whatever your name is, sweet spirit, it's saying to you, I love you just the way you are. Good? Let it in. All right. Now we're going to let it out, okay? Because what we take in, we got to let out, right? Can't just let it be one way. So anybody get their coffee this morning? A lot of us look forward to our coffee in the morning. It's part of our wake-up time, yeah? What else do we do to wake up in the morning? What are your rituals? What are your practices to wake up? Take a dive into that ice-cold pool. Serious, it's a question.
Stretching.
Hot shower. Ooh, cold shower, hot shower. Okay. Is everyone else still asleep? What do you do, Jennifer? Sorry?
Oh,
study nature. Ooh. Yeah. Oh. Who let the chickens out? Gotta do it. So my question is, on purpose, how awake are you feeling this morning? Is your body awake? Is your mind awake? Is your heart awake? If not, let it wake up just a little bit. Give it a little wiggle. Give it a little shake. Give it a little wake-up call. Because I think it's a really good question to ask ourselves over and over again. What has happened within me to wake up to the potential and the possibility of life? Because it didn't go to sleep. The potential, the possibility is awake all the time. And we are each finding ways to experience it, to recognize it, to know it in a greater way. Maybe it's prayer. Maybe it's meditation. Maybe it's journaling, a few of my favorite things. Maybe it's sitting in nature. Maybe it's coming to a service. Maybe it's playing the piano or listening to the piano. It could be all of these things. But if we will pay attention to what it is that we're doing and why we're doing it, then we make better choices, I would suggest. So, nature gives of herself freely for the sheer joy of expression. Shall we borrow that phrase and give of ourselves freely for the sheer joy of expression? Yeah, I think this is when we are feeling the most vitally awake. Because here's the thing, waking up cannot be mandated. I'm talking about the interior waking up, y'all. I'm talking about that one, waking up to our divine potential, waking up to the possibility, waking up to what's moving through us. It really can't be mandated, but it also can't be ignored, can it? Okay, well, who has tried to ignore it? I've even been successful at times for a short time, but inevitably, it always wins because that's the way of nature. So if we will be willing to accept that there is something within us that is constantly awakening to a greater expression of itself, then we can get in alignment with it rather than trying to make it happen. So, for example, birds pour forth its song as its expression of life, and a rose exhales its fragrance. Isn't that beautiful? Right? We also have something that is expressing from us, that is being lived through us. And when we are waking up to that, what we're doing is we're becoming more aware of it and more willing. That's just the best word for it, less resistant to it. And my prayer today is that we each know and experience and share our spiritual nature, which is our divine nature, more than ever before. My invitation is that we each accept our authentic expression as personal, individual, and as always growing. A seed becomes a blossom, but it does not end there. A plant continues to produce other flowers. We continue to have experience after experience after experience of the expression of the divine. That's what we're doing all the time. We're expressing the divine. Anybody ever not be expressing the divine? The answer is no. Pop quiz. I'll give you the answer before I ask the question. The same way, are we always, no matter what's going on in our life, are we always having an experience of the divinity within us? The answer is yes. I know. How come it doesn't look the way that I want it to look? Why doesn't it, right? Why? It's not the divine. What we're learning about and what we're experiencing is to accept that everything going on in our life is the expression of the divinity of God within us. And the divinity of God within us is what? Perfect. Yeah. Today's inspiration comes from Ralph Waldo Emerson, who said, "We must learn to accept ourselves for better or for worse, to trust the divine nature inherent in our own being, and to live from this divine nature alone." It's a tall order, because it's tempting, and we're often taught to live from the feedback we get from others and the feedback of our disbelief, from our forgetting that it's God and only God. We often think that it was our parents or our teachers or our boss or our children or our friends or that person out there that shoulda, woulda, coulda done it better. But really what we're learning is that the divinity of God within us cannot and will not be denied. It continues to be expressed through us. And what we're seeing out there is the expression of the divine that's coming from everyone else. We're all doing the same thing. We're all learning about this thing in its magnificence and in its beauty. And if we can remember that all of that feedback that we're getting is feedback, and we can accept it and maybe even benefit from it, then possibly we aren't in resistance with it so much and we aren't constantly saying, "Yeah, but." We can learn a lot from looking at nature and from considering gardens and plants and farmers and how we work with the seed. And a farmer cannot grow a plant. Truth. A farmer cannot grow a plant but understands that nature will do its part. We must come to know that nature obeys us as we first obey it. And we can look at the seeds that we're planting. Y'all might be familiar with this concept that we plant a seed, an idea in the mind. Infinite possibility exists here. We can plant any seed we want. What seed do y'all want to plant? Serious question. Because then what's going to happen is that nature is going to say, "Well, all right then, let's do it." And we're going to get what we planted. We're also going to notice that the wind contributes. And it blows our seeds into our neighbor's land. So what we're planting for ourselves matters, not just right here. It matters all over the place. Do you guys remember that story? It's been a while since I told it, but about the farmer who had the greatest crops in the whole land and of all of his neighbors, and he nurtured his crops so well, and he nurtured the seeds, and every year he would take his crop and he would take that 10%, you know, that really luscious, beautiful, magnificent 10%, and what would he do with it? Do you remember? He would give it to his neighbors because he knew that how their crops were going impacted how his were going too. He knew that if he gave his best to the lands around him, that when the winds did what they did, because the winds do what they do, it was going to blow good seeds and good things into his land. Same thing with us. What we're doing matters. What we're thinking, what we're saying, how we're behaving in life, it matters. It's making a difference. And when we are planting seeds and we are weeding our garden and we're paying attention to what's blowing in from our neighbors, and we're paying attention to what we're putting out there, it isn't to be exhausting. It's to realize that we do our part and nature does its part. And to understand the distinction. It's been said, and I found that this was just so relatable. It has been said that we are divinity in disguise. And to live fully authentic to our nature, we nurture the seeds of divinity within us. So there, you know, it's just such a lovely idea, because we've all watched, or if we haven't done it ourselves, we've watched what happens when you plant a seed in the earth and it grows. I actually can't have my George Burns rose plant grow in my garden without nurturing it just a little bit. It needs some water, it needs some sun, needs me to pick the roses sometimes to crop them. Same thing with us. All right, I digress. I have invited Reverend Rick Brown to expand on this idea a little bit. Rick, come on up and share your good idea of what we're talking about here. Mike, please. Thank you, Michael. Michael. There you go.
Good morning. Good morning. I wanted to share something with you. I wrote it down on my little card here. And it's something that I strive for, and I want a happy life. I want a happy life. How many of you want a happy life? Okay. How many of you have a happy life? Wow, this is good. How many of you want a happier life? All right, good. I've been studying for this class that's coming up on Thursday, Deepak Chopra on the 7 spiritual laws of success, and I learned through this process that one of the steps is write it down. So I wrote it down. We all know that happiness is an inside job, right? And as Patty's been talking about nurturing, you all know what nurturing is, right? And so we use the garden and plants as an example a lot of times. So we're getting pretty good at gardening. So how many of you are great gardeners right now? Fewer hands. But a lot of that comes down to, one, that's, you know, is that what we want, to nurture plants? And the other part of it is, how do we nurture the plants? What does nurture mean? And so that was the exciting thing for me. It's funny, and I like, how things line up. So Patty just said something that I wrote down. You must nurture the seeds of divinity within us. And, oh, wow, the exact words. And so one of the things that comes to me is, how do I nurture? What does that mean? Well, just like anything that you learn, there's some basics. And so as you learn the basics, then just like Hal playing the piano, you know, he didn't just one day say, I'm going to play the piano, or did you? But he learned the basics, and then he made the music his own. And so that's one of the things that we need to do in our strive for happiness is, you know, what are the basics? And so that's One of the things I learned from studying for this class is Deepak Chopra has seven steps or seven laws in the process for happiness and success. And so I read through them, and some of those, yeah, I know, some of those were, but then I learned they all are going in progression, and they're building on each other. And I went, hey, I'm going to grab a hold of this process because I really like it. And so that's the challenge to you is, you know, figure out what seeds you want to nurture on that divinity within you. And then once you figure that out, then set out to nurture them and understand what that means. Thank you.
In case you didn't hear it, that was a very clear invitation to come be part of Reverend Rick's class and be part of nurturing those seeds within you. Yeah? All right, who's in that class? Come on. Who's going to be in that class? All right, I expect to see more. Here's the thing. Wake-up calls come in all kinds of forms and manners, not just our alarm clock in the morning and not just our coffee. Even our spiritual practices are part of our wake-up call. Our classes are part of our wake-up call. Our challenges become part of our wake-up call when we can see them for what they are. And here's the thing that I've been working with a lot recently. Love and fear. Love and fear. Love and fear. They're both wake-up calls. They're, I think, equally hard to ignore and very compelling to pay attention to. And maybe it isn't so much that it's a wake-up call as it is a call to experience our aliveness, being alive. So in The Science of Mind, Ernest Holmes wrote, "Start with this simple proposition. The nature of God, of man, and of being is perfect. Harmonious, whole, perfect. Perfect God, perfect man, perfect being." If this is true, and I do believe it is, then what we're waking up to is that perfection that is all of life, that is within us individually, that is the nature of who we are. And so I'm encouraging myself, and I'm inviting us to work more with our nature and the nature of God within us and not against it. When we're in fear, we are tempted to stop believing that our nature is love, that our nature is whole, that our nature is perfect. When we're allowing fear of anything to have its way, it's you know how it feels, right? It's not that we don't know how fear feels. It's what do we do when we feel fear? And how do we stop it? How do we remind ourselves that there's something else there? Well, I think the first thing to do is to realize that fear is not the opposite of love. It's the same thing. It's a different level of living. It's a different level of experiencing the wholeness of God, the truth of our nature. When we're willing to consider this and when we're willing to recognize that when we're working with our nature and not against it, fear actually has the potential to become love. It doesn't go away, but through our understanding of our nature and working with it, not against it, fear evolves. It's not an opposite. It's a different level. And if I can work with it, with my true nature, with the essence of who I am, then the fear that I'm experiencing and feeling evolves. And what it evolves into is love. What it evolves through is acceptance and willingness and engagement, which is often the hardest part. Spirit is not something apart from form, but is something working through matter. The potential possibility of what we call the highest and the lowest is inherent in everything. They are not different things. They are the same thing functioning at different levels. That's Ernest Holmes. And something that I use a lot to remind myself of this is the divine potential lives in all of us. The divine potential lives within me. I can be operating at this level down here, which doesn't feel really great, or I can be operating at this level up here. And what I want to learn to do is to know the difference, to be able to feel it. There's a great story. An old grandfather explains it like this. There are two wolves barking inside of me. Mm-hmm. The first wolf is filled with anger and hatred and bitterness and mostly revenge. The second wolf is filled with love and kindness and happiness and mostly forgiveness. The grandson who he's talking to looks up at him and he says, "Well, which wolf do you think will win, Grandpa?" Y'all know the answer? Whichever one I feed. Yeah, whichever one I feed. Which one are we feeding? We distinguish love and fear so that we can get to know what the distinctions are of what it feels like, what it looks like, what it sounds like, what happens when I'm feeding fear, when I'm feeding hatred. You know, that's a word I don't like, the H word. When I'm feeding disappointment or doubt, or I am feeding criticism. So I had a little experience this week. And what it allowed me to do was to cast a whole lot of upset upon another person. Just get tied up in knots over it. Just get so tied up. I know, it's hard to believe that would happen with me. I know. Yeah. So it happened. Hey. Forgive me, Father. I can laugh now, but in the moment, I couldn't. In the moment, I was incapable. And I journaled about it. I prayed about it. I sang about it. And you know what that means. I was really working it. And I thought, man, I'm just going to have to go and tell them what I think and how I feel. Fortunately, I asked myself that question, do I need to do that? And then I let nature do its thing. And I interacted with this person and I realized, yep, I needed to tell them. And what I needed to tell them was, I love you. That was it. That was all that was needed. I didn't need to do anything else. I didn't need to say anything else. I didn't need to blame anything. I didn't need to get tied up in knots about anything. What I needed to do was to remember. I needed to remember. It wasn't about them. It was about me. I forgot. I had a moment to distinguish what was going on within me and to recognize it for what it was and to know that there was something else available. And I didn't want, no, I couldn't force it. Remember, you can't mandate it, can't make it happen. But there's something within us that knows. And so we do what is ours to do. We use our spiritual practices. We journal. We pray. We be still until the true word emerges, because it will emerge, and it is a capital T true. And then we let that Spirit of God, the living Spirit Almighty, move us into action. And then we can trust that action. We can trust that it is God, that it is love, and that it is for us. So whatever's going on in your life, whatever it is, whatever that challenge is in your life, it's not the opposite of what you want. It is a different level of living. And when we can allow ourselves to lift up our eyes, remember that practice? Lift up our eyes. Lift up our voice. Lift up our heart. Lift up and become aware. Nature will do its part. It's already in us. We don't have to go find it. It's already in us. Nature does not need our interference, does not need anything, simply our willing cooperation. Buddha says there are only two mistakes one can make along the road to truth. Do you know what they are? I'll let you know. Not going all the way and not starting. So we start. We start. We take what we know and we apply it to our life. That's the invitation. We prove what we know to ourselves. And we take the idea from our heart to our head, into our hands, into our feet, into our mouth, into our life, into the activity of who, what we're doing out here. And we live from the inside out. The divine incarnates itself in us. And when we live from this God nature, I call it spirit nature, we live in truth. I don't think we have any greater purpose in life than to live in truth, to express our divine nature, to let it move us into a greater expression of who we are. So whatever the situation, whatever the circumstance, whatever the relationship, let's just trust that nature within us, trust it. Let's know it, let's experience it, and let's share it. Yes?
Yes.
Ready and willing?
Yes.
Then you're ready to go, and so it is.
So it is.
Bring back our band.